It would probably be a blade across her carotid artery, or a wire around her throat. She hoped for the blade. She wouldn't feel the slice as pain, not with the specially designed dextroamphetamine she had racing through her veins right now. But she'd probably feel the strangulation.
Get up!
The weight lifted off her back, and she was drawn up by her wrists. She got her feet under her as quickly as possible to take the pressure off her shoulder joints. She needed to keep her arms usable. He stood behind her, but she could tell by where his breathing came from that he was tall. He pulled her wrists until she was on her tiptoes, struggling to maintain contact with the floor.
Okay, Shorty. Now you're gonna do something for me.
She didn't have the training to beat him in a fight, and she didn't have the strength to wrest herself free. She could only try to make use of the options she'd prepared. She let her weight sag precariously against her stressed shoulders for 1 second as she kicked the toe of her left shoe down with enough pressure to pop the stiletto blade out of the heel. The front-facing blade was in her right shoe. Then she slashed awkwardly back toward where his legs had to be. He jumped out of the way, loosening his grip enough for her to rip free and spin around, her right hand flying out for an open-handed slap. He was too tall. She missed his face, and her barb scraped against something hard on his chest. Body armor. She danced backward, away from the blow she could hear coming but could not see, her hands extended, trying to make contact with unprotected skin. Something cut her legs out from under her. She hit the ground and rolled away, but he was on top of her at once. He grabbed her hair and bounced her face against the concrete again. Her nose popped, and blood flooded her lips and chin. He bent down to speak directly in her ear.
Playtime is over, honey.
She tried to headbutt him. The back of her head connected with something, but not a face. Uneven spires. Metallic. Night vision goggles. No wonder he'd been able to control the fight so well. He slapped the back of her head. If only she'd put her earrings on.
Seriously, stop it! Look, I'm going to get off you. I can see you, and you can't see me. I've got a gun, and I will shoot you in the kneecap if you try one more stupid trick. Okay?
While he was talking, he reached back with one hand and ripped her shoes off, one after the other. He didn't check her pockets, so she still had the scalpel blades and the needles in her belt. He jumped off her. She heard him move away and click the safety off his gun.
What do you want me to do?
She asked in her best frightened little girl voice. The split lip helped. She imagined her face was a sight. It was going to hurt like hell when the drugs wore off.
Disarm your booby traps and open the door.
I'll need... sniff, sniff. The light on.
No problem. I'm switching my night vision goggles for your gas mask anyway.
She dropped her head, hoping to hide her expression. Once he had the mask on, 90% of her defenses were rendered obsolete. She limped, too theatrical, to the panel by the door and turned the light on. She couldn't think of any other option right now. He hadn't killed her immediately. That meant he wasn't under direct orders from the department. He must have an agenda here. She had to figure out what it was he wanted and then keep it from him long enough to gain the advantage. The bad news was that if he needed the door open, it was probably not just to have an easy escape route. It meant he had backup, which didn't help her odds. Or Daniel's, a voice in her head added. Like she needed more pressure. But Daniel was here because of her. She felt responsible for him. She owed him. When she turned, blinking against the brilliance of the overhead lights, the man was 20 feet from where she stood. He had to be 6'3" or 6'4", and the skin on his neck and jaw was definitely white, but that was all she could be sure about. His body was covered with a black one-piece suit, almost like a wetsuit, but rough, with jutting plates of Kevlar. Torso, arms, and legs all armored. He looked pretty muscular, but some of that could be the Kevlar. He wore heavy all-terrain boots, also black, and a black watch cap on his head. His face was hidden by her gas mask. Over one shoulder was slung an assault rifle, a Macmillan 50-caliber sniper. She'd done her homework. It wasn't hard to become an expert on just about anything when you spent all your free time studying. Knowing gun makes and models could tell her a lot about an assailant, or any suspicious man on the street who might be planning to become an assailant. This assailant had more than one gun. A high-standard HDS was holstered on his hip, and a Sig Sauer P220 was in his right hand, pointed at her knee. Right-handed, she noted. She had no doubt he could hit her kneecap from this distance. Given that particular rifle, she figured he could probably hit her wherever he wanted, from however far away he wanted to. He reminded her of Batman, but without the cape. Also, she thought she remembered something about Batman not ever using guns. Though if he did, assuming taste and skill, he would probably choose these. If she couldn't get this assassin out of the gas mask, it wouldn't matter how many super soldier friends were waiting for him outside. He would have no trouble killing her once he had what he wanted.
Disarm your leads.
She feigned a brief dizzy spell as she limped over to the barn door, trying to get as much time for thinking as possible. Who would want her alive? Was he a kind of bounty hunter? Did he think he could sell her back to the department? If they'd put out a contract on her, she was sure that all they would have asked for was her head. So, a blackmailer slash bounty hunter? I have what you want, but I'll release it alive back into the wild unless you double the reward. Smart. The department would definitely pay. That was the best guess she could come up with by the time she was to the back edge of the door. The system wasn't complicated. There were three sets of leads for each area of ingress. The first was outside in the bushes to the left of the barn door, hidden under a thin layer of dirt. Then, there was the trigger line that ran across the seam where the door opened, connected loosely enough to pull apart with the slightest breach. The third was the safety, tucked under the wood paneling beside the door. Its exposed wires were separated by an inch of space. The current was only stable if at least two of the connections were linked. She wondered if she should make the process look more convoluted than it actually was, but then decided there was no point. All he'd have to do was examine the setup for a few seconds to understand it. She wrapped the ends of the third lead tightly together, and then stood back. It's off. She made her voice crack in the middle of the words. Hopefully he would buy that he'd knocked the fight out of her.
If you would do the honors, he suggested.
She gimped her way to the other side of the door and then pulled it back, her eyes already on the spot in the darkness where she assumed the dark heads of his companions would be. There was nothing but the farmhouse in the distance, and then her eyes dropped, and she froze.
What is that?
She whispered. It wasn't actually a question for him, it was just shock breaking through her facade.
That,
he answered in a tone that could only be described as obnoxiously smug,
is 120 pounds of muscles, claws, and teeth.
He must have made some kind of signal. She didn't see it. Her eyes were locked on his backup, because the animal darted forward to his side. It looked like a German shepherd, a very big one, but it didn't have the coloring she associated with Alsatians. This one was pure black. Could it be a wolf?
Einstein, he said to the animal.
It looked up, alert. He pointed to her, and his next word was obviously a command.
Control.
The dog, Wolf, rushed her with its hackles rising. She backed up until the barn door was against her spine, her hands in the air. The dog braced itself, snout just inches from her stomach, its muzzle pulled back to expose long, sharp, white fangs. A low, rumbling growl began deep in its throat. Intimidate would have been a better name for the command. She thought about trying to get one of her barbs into the dog's skin, but doubted they were long enough to make it past its thick fur. And it wasn't like the thing was going to sit there and let her pet it. The Batman wannabe relaxed a bit, or she thought he did. It was hard to be positive about what his muscles were doing under the armor.
All right, now that we've broken the ice, let's talk.
She waited.
Where is Daniel Beach?
She could feel the shock on her face, even as she tried to suppress it. All her theories whirled around again and turned upside down.
Answer me!
She didn't know what to say. Did the department want Daniel dead first? Make sure the loose ends were all tied up neatly? She thought of Daniel, exposed and unconscious in the center of the tent, not exactly a strong hiding place, and felt sick. Batman stalked angrily toward her. The dog reacted, moving to the side to allow the man through, even as its snarl grew in volume. The man shoved the barrel of his Sig Sauer under her jaw, roughly, knocking her head against the barn door.
"If he's dead," the man hissed, "you're going to wish you were, too. I'll make you beg me to kill you."
She almost snorted. This thug would probably hit her a few times. Maybe, if he had any creativity, he would cut her up a bit, and then he'd shoot her. He had no idea how to generate and maintain real pain. But his threats did tell her something. He apparently wanted Daniel alive. So they had that one thing in common. Resistance was counterproductive at this point anyway. She needed him to think she was out of the game. She needed him to relax his guard. And she needed to get back to her computer. "Daniel's in the tent," she pointed with her chin, keeping her hands raised. "He's fine." Batman seemed to consider this for a moment.
"Okay, ladies first. Einstein," he barked.
"Heard."
He pointed to the tent. The dog barked in response and moved around to her side. It poked her thigh with its nose, then nipped her.
"Ow!"
she complained, jumping away. The dog got behind her and poked her again.
"Just walk slow and steady to your tent thing, and he won't hurt you."
She really didn't like the dog behind her, but she kept her pace to the injured hobble she'd been faking. She glanced back at the animal to see what it was doing.
"Don't worry," Batman said, amused. "People don't taste very good. He doesn't want to eat you. He'll only do that if I tell him to."
She ignored the taunt and moved slowly to the curtain access point.
"Hold that open so I can see in,"
he instructed. The tarp was stiff with the layers of egg foam. She rolled it back as far as she could. It was mostly black inside. Her computer screen glowed white in the darkness, the monitors dull green. Because she knew the shapes, she could make out Daniel under the blanket, just a foot off the ground, his chest rising and falling evenly. There was a long moment of silence.
"Do you want me to turn on the lights?" she asked.
"Hold it there."
She felt him come up behind her, and then the cold circle of the gun barrel pressing into the nape of her neck, just at her hairline.
"What's this?"
he murmured. She held perfectly still while his gloved fingers touched the skin next to the gun. At first she was confused, but then she realized he had noticed the scar there.
"Huh," he grunted, and his hand dropped. "Okay, where's the switch?"
"On the desk."
"Where is the desk?"
"About 10 feet in, on the right side, where you can see the computer screen." Would he take off the gas mask and put on the goggles again? The pressure of the gun disappeared. She felt him move back from her, though the dog's nose was still pressed against her butt. A slithering noise hissed across the floor. She looked down and watched the thick black cord for the closest work light whip past her foot. She heard the bang when it fell over, but no crunch of glass. He dragged the light past her, then flipped the switch. For a fraction of a second, she allowed herself to hope that he'd broken the light, but then it flickered to life.
"Control,"
he commanded the dog. The snarling started again, and she held herself very still. Aiming the light in front of him, he stepped into the tent. She watched the wide beam sweep the walls, then settle on the form in the middle. He moved into the room, sliding into a sinuous gait that was totally silent. Obviously a man of many skills. He walked around the body on the floor, checking the corners and probably looking for weapons, before he focused on Daniel. He crouched, removed the blanket, examined the bloody restraints and the IV, followed the sensors to the monitors, and then watched those for a moment. He put the light down, angling it at the ceiling to get the widest spread of illumination. Finally, he reached down, carefully removed the gas mask from Daniel's face, and set it on the floor.
Danny, she heard him whisper.
Chapter 8 Batman ripped the black glove off his right hand and pressed two fingers to Daniel's carotid. He bent down to listen to Daniel's breathing. She examined her attacker's hand, pale skin, fingers so long they almost looked like they had an extra joint. They looked familiar. Batman shook Daniel's shoulder lightly and asked louder,
Danny?
He's sedated, she volunteered. His face jerked up toward her, and though she couldn't see it, she could feel his glare. Suddenly he was on his feet, launching himself at her. He grabbed her arms and yanked them over her head again as he shoved his masked face into hers.
What did you do to him?
He shouted. Her concern for Daniel's safety evaporated. Danny was going to be just fine. The one she needed to worry about was herself. There's nothing wrong with him, she said calmly, dropping the injured damsel routine. He'll wake up from the sedation in about 2 hours feeling fine. I can bring him around sooner if you want.
Not likely, he growled.
They had a staring contest for a few seconds, one she wasn't sure if she'd won or lost. She could see only her own face in the reflective mask.
Okay, he said. Let's get you situated.
In a smooth move, he had her hands behind her back, wrists held tight in his gloveless right hand, probably holding the gun in his left. He marched her into the room, toward the folding chair by the desk, and she went along docilely. The dog's hot, heavy breath was close, following right behind. She was almost 70% sure she could twist her hand into a position that would put the left barbed ring against his skin, but she didn't try. It was a risk, but she wanted Batman alive. There was a large hole in her picture of what was going on, and Batman would have at least some of the answers she needed. She carefully nudged the covers over the barbs again. She didn't resist as he sat her, none too gently, in the chair. He pulled her hands in front of her and zip-tied them together.
I feel like you're the kind of person whose hands I want to keep an eye on, he muttered, as he bent down to secure her ankles to the chair legs.
All the while, the dog's face was directly in front of her own, eyes unblinking. A few drips of warm drool fell onto her sleeve and soaked through. Gross. He zip-tied her elbows to the chair back and stood up, towering over her now, dark and menacing. The long, silenced barrel of his HDS was just a few inches from her forehead. The switch for the overhead lights is right there. She jerked her chin toward the power strip on the back edge of the desk. Two standard outdoor extension cords were plugged into it. He stared in that direction, and she imagined he was eyeing the switches warily. Look, anything that can kill you is going to kill me first, she pointed out. He grunted, and then leaned away and punched the power button. The lights flared overhead. Suddenly, the tent looked less threatening. With all the medical equipment, it could have been a medic's tent in a war zone, except for the torture implements on the tray, of course. She saw his face orient toward them now. Props, she explained. She felt the glare again. He whipped a look back at Daniel, naked and clearly intact on the table. His focus swung back to her.
What's the flashing light?
He demanded, gesturing to the little black box with the keypad. It's telling me the door is unarmed, she lied evenly. In fact, the box wasn't hooked up to anything. It was just a nice red herring to distract from the real trap. He nodded, accepting that, then leaned over to look at her computer. There were no open documents, no files on the desktop. Her background was just a pale geometric design, little white squares on a faintly darker gray field.
Where are the keys?
He jerked his head toward Daniel. Taped to the bottom of the desk. He seemed to be eyeing her again through the mask. She willed herself to look calm and compliant. Take it off. Take it off. Take it off. She prayed silently. He kicked her chair over. She held her neck tight as her left arm and thigh smashed into the ground with bruising force. She was just able to keep her head from hitting the concrete again.
She wasn't sure if she was already concussed, and she really needed her brain working right. He grabbed the back of the chair and yanked her upright. In his right hand, he held the keys.
"That wasn't necessary," she said. "Einstein, control."
Growling in her face, more drool on her chest. Batman turned away and quickly unlocked Daniel's shackles.
"What's in the IV?"
"Saline in the top one, nutrients in the lower."
"Really?"
Sarcastic.
"What happens if I pull the tubing out?"
"He'll need a drink when he wakes up, but don't use the water bottles on the left side of the mini-fridge outside the tent. Those are poisoned." He turned, pulling the mask off his head so he could glare at her more effectively, yanking the sweaty watch cap off at the same time.
"Yes."
She kept the relief off her face as he dropped the mask on the floor.
"You've changed your tactics,"
he noted sourly, running his free hand through his short, damp hair.
"Or are the ones on the right really the poison bottles?"
She looked up at him calmly. "I thought you were someone else." And then she really looked at him. She didn't have the resources to keep her face from reacting now. All the theories spun around again, and a bunch of things fell into place. He smirked, realizing what she was seeing. So many clues she'd missed. The pictures that were Daniel, but at the same time, weren't. The holes in the file on Daniel's history, the missing photos, time, dates, birth dates, the easiest small changes to make if you wanted to hide something. Daniel's strange reticence to believe what he was seeing when he looked at the spy images. His struggles with loyalty. Those long, long fingers. "Other Daniel," she whispered. The smirk vanished.
"Huh?"
She blew out a breath and rolled her eyes. She couldn't help it. It was all too much like one of her mom's ridiculous soap operas. She remembered the frustration of every holiday she and her mother had spent together, the afternoons lost to the incredibly slow-moving, implausible dramas. No one was ever really dead. Everyone came back. And then there were the twins. Always with the twins. Batman actually didn't look that much like Daniel, as far as identical twins went. Daniel's features were refined, his aspect gentle. Batman was all hard angles and tightly gripped expressions. His hazel eyes seemed darker, maybe just because his brows were pulled down, putting them in shadow. His hair had the same color and curl but was cropped close, the way she would expect in an agent. Judging from his thicker neck, she would guess Batman had the gym musculature to Daniel's sports build. Not immensely bulky, or he wouldn't have been able to pass for his brother in the pictures, just harder, more defined. "Kevin Beach," she said in a flat voice. "You're alive." He sat on the edge of her desk. As her eyes followed him, she didn't let them rest for even a second on her computer's clock right by his elbow.
"Who were you expecting?"
"There were a few options, all of whom would want both me and your brother dead." She shook her head. "I can't believe I fell for this."
"For what?"
"Daniel's never even met De La Fuentes, has he? It was always you." His face, which had begun to relax, was suddenly guarded again.
"What?"
She nodded to the photographs scattered on the floor. He seemed to notice them for the first time. He leaned over to examine one, then bent down to grab it. Then the one underneath, and the next. He crumpled them in his fist.
"Where did you get these?"
"Compliments of a small department working for the American government. Entirely off the books. I used to be in their employ. They asked me to freelance." His face contorted in outrage.
"This is highly classified."
"You wouldn't believe my clearance level." Back in her face, he grabbed the front of her t-shirt and lifted her and the chair a few inches off the ground.
"Who are you?"
She kept herself calm. "I'll tell you everything I know. I got played, and I'm about as happy about it as you." He set her down. She wanted to count in her head, mark the time, but she was afraid he would notice her distraction. He stood over her, arms folded.
"What's your name?"
She spoke as slowly as she thought she could get away with. It used to be Dr. Juliana Fortis, but there's a death certificate with that name now. She watched his face to see if any of this information meant something to him. It didn't, as far as she could tell. I operated under the direction of the department. It doesn't have another name. It doesn't exist, officially. They worked with the CIA and some other black ops programs. Interrogation specialists. He sat back down on the edge of the desk. 3 years ago, someone decided to dissolve the department's two key assets, namely me and my mentor, Dr. Joseph Barnaby. Still no recognition. I don't know why, although we had access to incredibly sensitive information, and I'm guessing something we knew was the motive. They murdered Dr. Barnaby and tried to murder me. I've been running ever since. They found me 4 times. 3 times they tried to have me assassinated. The last time, they apologized. His eyes were narrowed, evaluating. They told me they had a problem and they needed me. They gave me a stack of files on the De La Fuente situation and named your brother as his collaborator. They said that in 3 weeks, Daniel would be spreading the supervirus across the American Southwest. They told me I had 3 days to find out where the virus was and how to stop De La Fuentes from implementing his plan. He was shaking his head now.
They told you that much?
He asked in disbelief. Counterterrorism was always the main component of my job. I know where all the warheads and the dirty bombs are buried. He pursed his lips, making a decision.
Well, since you already know the details, I guess it's not a huge breach of policy for me to tell you that I shut down the De La Fuente situation 6 months ago. De La Fuente's death is not common knowledge. What's left of the cartel is keeping this quiet so they don't appear vulnerable to the competition.
She was surprised at the relief she felt. The weight of knowing that so many people were doomed to painful execution had been heavier than she'd realized. Yes, she breathed. That makes sense. The department wasn't that cold-blooded, apparently. They'd used a nightmare catastrophe to motivate her, but they weren't messing around with civilians still in danger. And the serpent? He looked at her blankly. Sorry, department nickname. The domestic terrorists?
My associates bagged 2 of the 3 ringleaders and took up the entire southern chapter. No survivors.
She smiled tightly.
You're an interrogator,
he said in a suddenly icy voice.
A torturer.
She lifted her chin. Yes.
And you tortured my brother for information he didn't have.
Yes. The very initial phases, at least. He backhanded her. Her head snapped to the side, the chair bobbled, and he shoved it down with 1 foot.
You're going to pay for that, he promised.
She worked her jaw for a second to see if anything was broken. When she was satisfied that nothing was seriously compromised, she responded. I'm not positive, she said, but I think that's why they did this to him, why they fed me this whole elaborate story. Through his teeth.
What reason?
They haven't had the greatest success in killing me. I guess they thought you would get the job done. He clenched his jaw. What I don't understand, though, she continued, is why they didn't just ask you to do it. Or order you, I suppose. Unless you're no longer with the CIA, she guessed. The gun had been the giveaway. From her research, she was pretty certain that the HDS was the gun most commonly carried by CIA agents.
If you didn't know about me, how do you know where I work?
He demanded. About halfway through his question, she saw the bright white rectangle in her peripheral vision go black. Trying to be inconspicuous, she sucked in the deepest breath through her nose she could manage.
Answer me!
He growled, raising his hand again. She just stared at him, not breathing. He hesitated, brow furrowed, then his eyes went wide. He dove for the mask on the floor. He was out before he hit the ground. Another thump. The dog collapsed into a puddle of fur beside her chair. Under testing circumstances, she'd once held her breath for 1 minute and 42 seconds, but she'd never been able to repeat the feat. Usually she ran out of air at about 1:15, still way above average.
Lung capacity had become a priority in her life. This time, of course, she hadn't been able to hyperventilate beforehand. But she wouldn't need a full minute. She hopped her chair over to Batman's inert form and pushed herself forward, bracing her knees against his back. With her hands secured in front of her, it was easy-ish. Kevin Beach had left Daniel's gas mask on the floor. She hooked it with one finger and then tilted the chair back until all four legs were on the ground. She leaned her face as close to her hands as she could and slipped the mask over her head, pressing the rubber rim tight to her face to create a seal. She blew out her air in a big whoosh, clearing the chamber, and then took a hesitant breath. If some of the chemical had lingered, she figured she still would be okay. She'd built up a decent resistance and would not have been out as long as the others, but it was especially nice to have such a big head start. She scooted to the desk and rubbed the zip tie around her wrists against the edge of the scalpel on her props tray. It popped quickly against the pressure she was generating. It was easy work to slice the rest of the ties, and then she was free. First things first. She reset the screensaver on her computer to come on after 15 minutes of inactivity. She couldn't lift Batman, sprawled face down on the floor beside his brother, but his arms and legs were close enough to Daniel's that she could use the restraints that had been around Daniel's left wrist and left ankle to secure Kevin's. He'd thrown the key carelessly on the table by Daniel's side. She pocketed it. She didn't re-secure Daniel. Maybe it was a mistake, but she'd already done so much to him it just felt unfair. And underneath it all, she wasn't afraid of him. Another potential mistake. She stripped Batman of his guns and removed the cartridges and firing pins from the rifle and the HDS. She put the safety on the Sig Sauer and tucked it into the back of her belt. She liked it. It looked more serious than her PPK. She went out to the barn stalls to find her PPK and then shoved it in beside the Sig Sauer. She was more familiar with her own. Better to keep it handy, too. She found her shoes, stashed the other guns, and then grabbed the mover straps on her way back into the tent. The dog was too heavy to move easily, so she wrapped the straps around it and hauled it back to the bunk room. At first, she simply closed the door and walked away. Dogs didn't have opposable thumbs. A moment later, though, she changed her mind. The dog's name was Einstein. Who knew what it was capable of? She looked for something to drag in front of the door. Most of the heavy machinery was bolted down. After a few seconds of thought, she walked around to the silver sedan. It just fit between the tent and the stalls. She pulled it right up to the bunkroom door, wedged the front bumper tight against the wood, and then put it in park. She threw the parking brake on for good measure. She closed the barn door and rearmed it. A quick look outside told her that it was almost dawn. Back to the other Daniel. The bat suit was a chore to remove. The fabric between the Kevlar panels was thick and ribbed with fine cables, almost like gristle. She snapped two blades on it before finally quitting at his waist. She settled for peeling back the top half and patting down his legs, which didn't have as much Kevlar to disguise them. She found a knife holstered in the small of his back and one shoved into each boot. She pulled his socks off. He was missing the pinky toe on his left foot, but he had no other weapons that she could find. Not that he'd need any if he got his hands on her again. His whole body was roped with lean, hard bands of muscle. His back was a mess of scars, some from bullets, some blades, and one bad burn, with one more telling scar under the edge of his hairline. He'd removed his tracker, too. Definitely no longer with the CIA. A defector? A double agent? But how had he found his brother? She remembered the droning of the noisy prop plane, the booming thud of the improvised crash landing. Someone in a hurry, she'd thought. Someone for whom time was the biggest problem. She turned to look at Daniel. It seemed another examination was in order. She'd done a more thorough job going over his back, so she looked closely now at his stomach, groin, and thighs. Something she should have done before, but she'd misread the situation badly. It was the idea of time, the hurried way Batman had arrived and attacked, that pointed her toward what she was looking for. An ordinary tracker would indicate only where the subject was,
and Daniel wasn't really that far from home, not far enough to cause his dead brother to panic and run in, guns blazing. So this tracker must monitor something more than just location, and it would have to be placed in the right spot. She wanted to kick herself when she saw it, the little red tail of a scar sticking out from the edge of the tape she had used to secure the catheter tube against his leg. She pulled the tape now, always better to do that when the subject was still under anyway, and then removed the catheter. He'd be getting up soon. The scar was tiny, with nothing raised under the skin. She figured the device must be more deeply implanted, next to the femoral artery, no doubt. When his blood pressure had gone crazy with the first round of interrogation, or maybe even from his fear when he'd first woken up, it must have tipped off his brother, and whoever else was monitoring him. The tracker would have to come out. She had enough time before he woke up, so she got her first aid kit. After snapping on some gloves, she numbed the site and sterilized the scalpel. Good thing she hadn't broken all of them on the bat suit. She scrubbed the skin with iodine, then made a quick, neat incision on top of the old one, though a bit longer. She didn't have forceps or tweezers, so she just poked around carefully with one finger on the inside and one on the outside. When she found the device, a little capsule about the size of a throat lozenge, she was able to pressure it out fairly easily. She cleaned up the site and then superglued the edges together. After that, she treated the raw skin on his wrists and ankles, cleaning and bandaging everything. Finally, she put the blanket over him and got him the pillow. The capsule she left to cool on the steel table. To anyone watching the tracker on a monitor, it would appear that Daniel Beach had just died. She had a feeling that his death wouldn't bother anyone in the department. She had a better sense of the other side's plan now, and she was pretty sure it wasn't all about her. She exited the tent to attend to her own face, first wiping off the blood and then trying to determine the extent of the damage. The lip was swollen, and the tear needed a stitch. She applied a drop of superglue. Her cheek was missing a few layers of skin, and she was going to have a matched set of very pronounced black eyes. Her nose was swollen and crooked, so she took advantage of her current painless state to push it back into shape as well as she could. The pain would return fairly soon, though she'd given herself the maximum dose of the drug she'd privately named Survive. It wasn't meant to work long-term. It was just for making it through an attack like the one she'd just endured. Kind of like the adrenaline her body naturally generated, just much more powerful, and with some opiates to block the pain. Survive wasn't on the books. Her list of duties had not included creating anti-torture concoctions, but she'd thought it might be something she'd need someday, and she'd been right. This wasn't the first time she'd used it. She'd overreacted to those earlier assassination attempts, but it was the first time she'd actually suffered through a decent beating with Survive in her system. She was pleased with its performance. She didn't have anything to stabilize her nose with, so she would have to try to be more careful with her face for a while. Luckily, she was a back sleeper. The face was going to be a problem, a big problem. She couldn't exactly walk into a grocery store right now and escape notice. When she had done everything she could think of to do, she lay on the cot for 10 minutes, just gathering her strength, or what was left of it. The drug still made her feel strong, but she knew she'd sustained some damage. There would be repercussions to deal with. She needed time to rest and heal. Time no one was going to give her. Chapter 9. She decided to wake Daniel up. Once Batman came around, which he probably would in about 15 minutes or so, the conversation was not going to be very genteel. She wanted a chance to explain and apologize before the shrieking and the death threat started. She reset the protocols on the computer. The chemical mixture in the air had long since dispersed, so she didn't need the gas mask inside the tent anymore. She grabbed the other mask, then tucked both sets of straps through her belt, keeping them close. She pulled Daniel's IV first. She didn't want him tethered to anything at all when he woke up. He'd had enough of that. His veins were still looking good. It was easy to inject the solution into the antecubital fossa of his other elbow. She sat on the edge of the table beside him, so close to the floor that her knees were up by her shoulders, and waited. He came to slowly, blinking against the overhead lights. He raised one hand to shade his eyes, then awareness hit. He stared at his hand, free, bandaged, and then his eyes darted around the bright room.
"Alex?"
he asked quietly.
"Right here."
He turned toward her gingerly, moving his legs under the blanket, checking to see if he was still bound.
"What is happening now?"
he asked cautiously, his eyes still struggling to focus. "I believe you, and I'm very sorry for what I did to you." She watched him process that. Carefully, he raised himself up on one elbow, then clutched at the blanket, realizing again that he was naked. It was funny how non-medical people reacted to that. Physicians were fairly relaxed about nudity in general. She felt exactly the same about nudity as any other doctor, but he wouldn't assume that. She should have put on her lab coat.
"You do believe me?"
he asked. "Yes. I know you're not the person I thought you were. I was misled." He sat up a little farther, moving warily, waiting for something to hurt. He should feel fine, though, just tired from the muscle spasms. And his upper thigh would be a little sore when the local wore off. He started, and then froze.
"What happened to your face?"
"It's a long story. Can I say something before I get into it?" His expression was full of concern. For her? No, that couldn't be right.
"Okay,"
he agreed hesitantly. "Look, Daniel, what I told you before was true. I don't like hurting people. I didn't like hurting you. I only do that when I think the other option is much more horrible. I have never in my life done this before. Hurt a totally innocent person. Never. Not every person I've been asked to interrogate was as depraved as the rest, but all of them were at least part of the plot. I've long since realized that my old bosses will stoop to almost anything, but I still can't believe that they set me up to interrogate someone entirely guiltless." He thought about it for a few seconds.
"Are you asking me to forgive you?"
"No, I'm not asking for that. I would never ask for that. But I wanted you to know. I never would have hurt you if I hadn't truly believed it would save lives. I am so sorry."
"And what about the drug dealer? The virus?"
he asked anxiously. She frowned. "I've received some new information. Apparently, De La Fuentes was taken care of."
"No one is going to die?"
"Not because of a weaponized virus spread by a drug czar, no."
"So that's good, right?"
She sighed. "Yeah, I guess that's the silver lining of what happened here."
"Now will you tell me what happened to your face? Did you have an accident?"
Again with the concern. "No, my injuries are related to that new information I mentioned." She wasn't sure how to break it to him. Sudden indignation. His shoulders tensed.
"Somebody did that to you? On purpose? For hurting me?"
His mind certainly didn't work like someone in her line of business. Things that would be obvious to anyone who had ever worked on any facet of a mission were totally foreign to him. "Essentially," she answered.
"Let me talk to him," he insisted. "I believe you too. I know you didn't want to do it. You were trying to help."
"That's not really the issue. Daniel, you know when I was showing you those pictures before and you recognized the person in them, but you didn't want to tell me who it was?" His face closed up. He nodded. "You can relax. I'm not asking you to confess anything. This isn't a trick. I didn't know you had a twin. They covered that up in the file so I wouldn't..."
"No. But it wasn't Kevin," he interrupted. "That's what I didn't understand. It looked just like him, but it's impossible. Kevin is dead. He died in prison last year. I don't know who it could be unless we were actually triplets, and I think Mom might have noticed that."
He trailed off, watching her expression change.
"What?"
he asked. "I'm not sure how to tell you this."
"Tell me what?"
She hesitated for a moment, then stood up and walked around the table. His eyes tracked her. Then he sat up, bunching the blanket carefully around his waist. She stopped and looked down. His eyes followed hers. Kevin Beach's face was turned toward the table where Daniel sat. It was curious how much more he looked like Daniel when he was unconscious. All the tension in his expression erased.
Kevin,
Daniel whispered, face going white, then flushing bright red. Did you know your brother worked for the CIA? She asked quietly. He looked up, aghast.
No. No, he was in prison. He'd been dealing drugs.
He shook his head.
Things got bad after our parents died. Kev went off the deep end. He self-destructed. I mean, after West Point.
West Point?
Yes,
he said, face blank. Obviously, the significance was lost on him.
Before the drugs, he was a different person. Graduated near the top of his class. He was accepted to Ranger School.
Daniel trailed off, assessing her frown. Of course. Alex suppressed a sigh, upset with herself for not worrying more about the file's gaps in information, for not taking the time to find a faraway library where she could have safely searched all Daniel's family connections. Daniel looked down at his brother again.
He's not dead now, is he?
Just sleeping. He'll wake up in a few minutes. Daniel's brow furrowed.
What is he wearing?
Some kind of military armored suit, I guess. Not my specialty.
The CIA,
he whispered. Black ops, I would imagine. Your brother didn't self-destruct. He just switched divisions. That's why he was involved with the drug lord. His wide eyes turned sober.
He was helping the drug lord with the virus?
He whispered. No, shutting him down, actually. We're basically on the same side, though you wouldn't know it to look at us. She nudged his supine form with her toe. Daniel's head whipped back up to hers.
Did Kevin do that to your face?
Funny, but he sounded more upset about that than the idea that his brother was a murderous criminal. Yes, and I did this to him. Another nudge.
But he's going to wake up.
Alex nodded. She was a little conflicted about Batman waking up. It wasn't going to be pretty. And Daniel was being so nice about everything. About her. That would probably change once his brother started talking. He smiled just a little, staring at his brother's exposed back.
So, you won?
She laughed. Temporarily.
He's a lot bigger than you are.
I would say I was smarter, but I made some pretty huge mistakes in my security here. I think I was just luckier this time. Daniel started to get to his feet, then paused.
Are my clothes around here anywhere?
Sorry, no. I thought there might be tracking devices in them. I had to cut them off you and ditch them. He blushed again, all the way down to that small spot on his chest. He cleared his throat.
Why would someone track me?
Well, at the time, I thought the drug lord might be monitoring you, or that you were a trap, and my department would use you to track me, which is a little bit closer to the truth, actually. He frowned.
I am so confused.
She gave him the bullet points version as succinctly as possible. While she was talking, he got to his feet, wrapping the blanket around his waist like an oversized towel, and started pacing back and forth in front of his brother's body.
They tried to kill you 4 times?
He asked when she was finished. 5 now, I think, she said, looking pointedly at Batman.
I can't believe Kevin is alive.
He sighed. He folded his long legs under the blanket and settled to the floor beside his brother's head.
I can't believe he lied to me. I can't believe he let me think he was a criminal. I can't believe he let me think he died. I can't believe how many times I visited him. Do you know how long it takes to drive from D.C. to Milwaukee?
He stared in silence at his brother. She let him have a moment. She couldn't imagine how she would feel if Barnaby walked back into her life without warning. How did you process something like that?
When he wakes up, Daniel murmured gently, I'm going to punch him in the throat.
Well, that was one way to process it.
Why did you handcuff him?
Daniel wondered.
Because as soon as he's conscious, he's going to try to kill me. Wide eyes again.
What?
It's not hard to understand. All he knew when he came through the roof was that someone was hurting you. He let me live only because he wasn't sure if you were really okay. For example, maybe I would have to give you an antidote or something. I'm pretty sure if I hadn't gotten the upper hand for a second, the minute you woke up, he would have shot me.
She could see Daniel didn't believe her.
He shook his head, eyebrows pulling down, upset. A thatch of curls flopped onto his forehead, still a little damp with sweat. It was amazing how short a time had actually passed, but everything had changed, and she needed a new plan. Was it safe to go back to her most recent home, the place she'd been living when Karsten had contacted her? It would certainly be easiest. There was food there, and no one would have to see her face for as long as it took to look normal again. She didn't think she'd compromised the house. But then what? How much of her nest egg had she blown through for this stupid trap? How long would she be able to keep going on what she had? Karsten knew about her online presence, so it would be a risk to go looking for a real job on the internet. The department didn't have to know where she was to tie her hands. Something touched her leg, and she jumped. It was just Daniel's hand.
I didn't mean to scare you. Sorry.
Don't apologize.
You just look so worried. Don't. I can talk to Kevin.
She smiled humorlessly. Thanks, but I'm not worrying about Lazarus at the moment.
You're worried about your department.
She turned away, walked to her computer, and rested her hand against the spacebar. Hopefully it didn't appear deliberate.
Yeah,
she said without looking at him. You could say that. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw a short hitch in Kevin's breathing before it evened out again. Good thing she'd moved away. She definitely didn't want to be within reach now.
Is there anything I can do to help?
Daniel asked seriously. She stared at him, surprised to feel actual tears pricking her eyes. I don't think I deserve your help, Daniel. He made an exasperated noise in the back of his throat. And really, she continued, you've got enough problems of your own. It was clear he hadn't thought through the long-term implications of what had happened.
What do you mean?
You're a target now, too. You've just learned a lot of things that you're not supposed to know. If you go home, if you go back to your normal life, they'll end it.
Not go back?
He was totally stunned. Pity welled up inside her. Again, she remembered how far away his kind of life was from hers. He probably thought he could fix everything by hiring a lawyer or writing to his congressman.
But Alex, I have to go back. My team is in the championship tournament.
She couldn't help it. She started laughing, and the pricking tears turned into real drops. She saw his expression and waved her hand in apology. Sorry, she said, gasping. It's not funny at all. I'm sorry. I think my painkillers are beginning to wear off. He got quickly to his feet.
Do you need something? Aspirin?
No, I'm good. I just have to come down from the high. He walked over and rested one hand lightly on her arm. She felt the sting, the bruising there just beginning to grow sensitive. It was going to be a very rough day.
Are you sure?
He asked.
Can't I get you something?
Why are you being so nice to me? He looked at her in surprise.
Oh, I guess I see your point.
Finally, she thought. She'd been starting to worry that maybe the drug she'd used to kidnap him, follow the leader, had some permanent neurological effects they'd missed in the trials. Look, she said, after I have a little chat with Kevin, I'll get my stuff together and then I'll give you the key so you can unlock your brother once I'm in my car.
But where will you go? What about your injuries?
You're being nice again, Daniel.
Sorry.
She laughed once more. The sound hitched on the end, like a sob.
Seriously, though, he said, you don't have to leave right away. You look like you could use some sleep and some medical attention.
Not on the agenda. She eased herself into the desk chair, hoping he couldn't see just how stiff and weary she felt.
I wish we could talk some more, Alex. I don't know what I'm supposed to do now. If you really mean it, that I can't go back, I don't even know how to begin to think about that.
I do mean it. And I'm sorry, but I think your brother can probably fill you in on the details. I imagine he's better at hiding than I am. He looked at his brother, wearing half of a batsuit, doubtfully.
You think?
Don't you agree, Kevin? She asked. She was fairly sure he'd been awake for at least a few minutes. Daniel fell to his blanketed knees next to his brother.
Kev?
Slowly, with a sigh, Kevin turned his head to look at his brother.
Hey, Danny.
Daniel leaned in and embraced him awkwardly. Kevin patted Daniel's arm with his free hand.
Why, Kev? Why?
Daniel asked, his voice muffled in Kevin's hair.
Trying to keep you safe, kid. Safe from people like that.
And he added several quite unflattering descriptions of her. She knew all the individual words, but the combinations were fairly unusual. Daniel jerked away and cuffed Kevin's head.
Don't talk like that. Are you kidding me? That psychopath tortured you.
Not for very long. And she only did it because...
Are you defending that?
More creativity. Daniel smacked him again. Not hard, but Kevin wasn't in a mood to play. He grabbed Daniel's hand and twisted it into an unpleasant position. He got his right knee pulled up under his body and tried to yank away from the table. The locked wheels whined against the floor as the metal slab shifted a few inches. Her eyes widened. The table had to weigh at least 400 pounds. She scooted her chair back. Daniel wrestled with his free hand, trying to break his brother's hold. I'll gas you again if you don't let go of him, she promised Kevin. The bad news is, the chemical I'm using does have a few negative side effects. It kills only a small percentage of your brain cells with each use, but it adds up over time. Kevin dropped Daniel's hand, glared once at her, and then focused on his brother.
Danny, listen to me, he hissed. You're bigger than her. Get the keys and get me out of these.
Suddenly his face froze, went beet red, and the vessels in his forehead pulsed in time with his words.
Where is my dog?
He shouted at her. The table squealed another inch across the floor. Sleeping in the back room? She had to work to keep her voice even. It weighs less than you. The gas will take longer to wear off. Daniel was rubbing his wrist and looking confused.
Dog? If he's not 100%,
Kevin threatened. Your dog will be fine. Now, I need to ask you a few questions. Daniel looked up at her, wild-eyed.
What?
She glanced at him and shook her head. Not like that. Just a normal exchange of information. She turned back to Kevin. Can we talk calmly for just a few minutes, please? Then I'll get out of your hair.
In your dreams, psycho. We've got unfinished business.
She raised her eyebrows over her blooming black eyes. Can we talk for a few minutes before I put you into a medically induced coma, then?
Why would I do anything for you?
Because your brother's safety is involved, and I can tell that's something that matters to you.
You're the one who pulled Danny into this.
That's not entirely accurate. This is as much about you as it is about me, Kevin Beach. He glowered at her.
I already don't like you, lady. You really don't want to make that feeling stronger.
Relax, Black Ops. Hear me out. Daniel's eyes were flashing back and forth like he was a spectator at a tennis match. Kevin glared. The CIA thinks you're dead? She asked. He grunted. I'll take that as a yes.
Yeah, that's a yes, you...
Daniel backhanded the top of Kevin's head and then scooted out of the way as Kevin made a grab for him. Then Kevin refocused on her.
And I'm going to keep it that way. I'm retired.
She nodded, considering. She opened a blank document on her computer and typed a line of random medical terms.
What are you typing?
Notes. Typing helps me think. Actually, she was sure he would notice if she kept accidentally touching the computer to keep it awake, and she might need that trap again today.
So what does it matter? I died. Danny shouldn't be a target anymore.
I was a target? Daniel asked. Kevin propped himself up on his right elbow and leaned toward his brother.
I worked deep undercover, kid. Anyone who connected me to you would have used you as leverage. It's one of the downsides of the job. That's why I went through the whole prison charade. As long as on paper Kevin Beach was away, the bad guys wouldn't know about you. I haven't been Kevin in a long time.
But when I visited, the agency hooked me up with the warden. When you were on your way, if I could, I'd fly in and do the meeting. If I was unavailable...
That's why you were in isolation. Or they said you were. Not for fighting.
Yep.
I can't believe you lied to my face for so many years. It was the only thing I could do to keep you safe.
What about maybe picking a different job?
She broke in when the vessels in Kevin's head started to swell again. Could we put the reunion drama on hold for the moment? I think I've got it pieced together. Listen, please, and you'll tell me if I'm wrong, I'm sure. Two nearly identical faces regarded her with nearly opposite expressions.
Okay, she continued.
So, Kevin, you faked your death after the De La Fuentes job, right? Kevin didn't respond in any way, so she went on. That was 6 months ago, you said. I can only conclude that the agency was concerned about the lack of a body.
Oh, there was a body.
Then they were concerned about the inconsistencies with that body, she snapped, and they thought of a plan to draw you out just in case.
He frowned. He knew his former bosses, just like she knew hers.
Daniel's your weak spot, like you said. They're leverage against you. They know this. They decide to take him, see what happens. But they know what you're capable of, and no one wants to be the one left holding the bag if you do turn up alive.
But,
Kevin started to say. He stopped himself, probably realizing whatever argument he'd been about to make wouldn't hold up. You're a problem for the CIA. I'm a problem for my department. At the top, the people involved in both our former workplaces are pretty tight. So they offer me a deal. Do a job for us, and we'll call off the hunt. They must have had it worked out pretty solidly before they contacted me, fixed the files, got ready to feed me the crisis story I can't turn my back on. None of them make a move on me because they've already sacrificed three assets trying, and they don't want any more losses. They knew I'd come in prepared for anything like that. But if you were really good, maybe I wouldn't be prepared enough for you. Kevin's face had changed while she was working it out.
And either way, he concluded, one problem gets solved.
It's elaborate. Sounds more like your agency than mine, if I had to guess.
Yeah, it does sound like them, actually.
He agreed grudgingly.
So they put us together like two scorpions in a jar and shake it up, she said. One way or another, they get a win on the books. Maybe if they're really, really lucky, we take each other out. Or at least weaken the winner. No chance of any losses on their side. And they had weakened her, reduced her assets, and damaged her physically. A partial success for them.
And it doesn't bother them that my brother is also stuck in the jar? He said furiously. Only he's an ant, not a scorpion. They just throw him into the mix, don't even care that he's completely defenseless.
Hey, Daniel protested.
No offense, Danny, but you're about as dangerous as hand-knitted socks.
Daniel opened his mouth to respond, but a loud whine from the bunk room interrupted. The whine was quickly followed by angry snarls and a few sharp barks, then a strident clawing at the wooden door. She was glad she'd gone the extra mile in securing the wolf.
He's upset, Kevin accused.
The dog is fine. There's a toilet back there. It won't even get dehydrated. Kevin just raised his eyebrows, not as concerned about the animal as she would have expected. The clawing and snarling didn't let up.
You really brought a dog?
Daniel asked.
More of a partner.
He looked at her.
Well, what now? Their plan failed.
Narrowly. He grinned.
We could go another round.
As much as I would dearly love to inject a few things into your system, I'd rather not give them the satisfaction.
Fair enough.
The dog was scratching and growling in an unbroken stream through all of this. It was getting on her nerves. I do have a plan. Kevin rolled his eyes.
I bet you always have a plan, don't you, Shorty?
She regarded him with flat eyes. I can't rely on muscle, so I rely on brains. It appears you have the opposite problem. He laughed derisively.
Kev? Daniel interjected. I'd like to point out that you are change up on the floor. Shut up, Danny.
Please, boys, if I could get one more second of your time. She waited till they looked at her. Here's the plan. I write an email to my ex-boss. I tell him I got the truth, the real truth, and both of you are out of the picture. I really don't appreciate the manipulation. If he tries to contact me in any way again, I'm making a personal visit to his kitchen pantry.
You claim the win?
Kevin asked in a disbelieving voice.
Please.
Chained on the floor, Daniel murmured under his breath. It's a gift, she snapped back. You get to be dead again. No one is looking for either of you. Kevin's cynical expression dissolved. For a second, the twin thing was a lot more evident. The sound of the dog was like a howling wood chipper in the next room. She hadn't really planned to stick around for her security deposit, but it clearly was not an option now.
Why would you do that for us?
Kevin asked. I'm doing it for Daniel. I owe him. I should have been smarter. I shouldn't have taken the bait. It was all so completely obvious now, how easily she'd slipped through their surveillance, because there hadn't been any. How simple it had been to snatch Daniel because no one was trying to stop her. The heavy-handed way they'd given her a deadline with plenty of time for her to act. It was embarrassing.
Then what happens to you?
Daniel asked quietly. She almost had to read his lips over the noise of the dog. I haven't decided yet. She had learned a few things from this exercise in gullibility, maybe things they didn't want her to know. There weren't going to be any helicopters or elimination teams. Karsten, the one name she could be absolutely certain of at this point, and whoever else wanted her dead, had sent only the occasional lone assassin because that was all they had. Her enemies had been driven to this wild collaboration, and she knew it wasn't because the department didn't have the resources. It could only be because she wasn't common knowledge. And Karsten, and whoever his confederates were, couldn't afford to have her become so. She'd assumed, when she'd seen the obituary for Juliana Fortis and read about the cremation, that everyone involved was in on the scam. But what if it was just a few key people? What if Karsten had promised his superiors that the job would be done and then was afraid to admit he'd missed on the first SWAT? Or, revolutionary idea, what if most people at the department thought it was a lab accident, that she and Barnaby had mixed the wrong test tubes and punched out together? What if Karsten's superiors hadn't wanted her dead? What if only those few key individuals had wanted that, and now they had to keep their attempts to finish the job under the radar? That would change everything. It played. It fit with the facts. It made her feel stronger. The ones who had arranged her death had been afraid of what she knew, but they had never been afraid of her. Maybe it was time for that to change. There was a sudden ear-splitting noise, an explosive fragmenting of wood, and then the enraged snarling got a lot closer. Chapter 10. It took her 1 second to realize what had happened, and by that time, the rabid wolf was bounding into the tent. There was still a little bit of extra adrenaline in her system, apparently. She was on top of the desk before the animal was all the way inside, and her nervous system, not satisfied with that distance, launched her toward the PVC framework overhead before she had time to realize what she was doing. She caught hold with both hands, flipped her legs up, and crossed her ankles around the pipe, then wrapped her elbows tightly around as well. She turned her head to the side to see that the creature was right below her, big paws on the desk, as it strained to get its teeth into her. One paw mashed down on the keyboard, which was too bad. A little gassing would help a lot right now, and she already had both masks. The dog snarled and slavered under her while she tried to maintain her hold. She'd used the heavy-duty 5-inch diameter Class 200 pipe, but it was still shaking from her sudden attachment to it. She was sure it would bear her weight, unless someone attacked the base. Hopefully Kevin wouldn't think of that. Kevin started laughing. She could imagine how she looked.
"Who's chained to the floor now?" he asked.
"Still you," Daniel muttered.
At the sound of his master's voice, the dog gave a little whine and looked around. It dropped off the desk and went to examine Kevin, with one parting growl in her direction. Kevin patted its face while the dog leaned down to lick him, still whining anxiously.
"I'm okay, buddy. I'm good."
"He looks just like Einstein," Daniel said,
wonder in his tone. The dog looked up, on guard at the sound of a new voice. Kevin patted Daniel's foot.
"Good boy. He's cool. He's cool."
It sounded like another command. And sure enough, dropping the whine, the huge beast went to Daniel with its tail wagging furiously. Daniel stroked the gigantic head like that was the most natural thing in the world.
"That's Einstein the Third," Kevin explained.
Daniel scratched his fingers through the thick coat appreciatively.
"He's beautiful."
Her arms were getting tired. She tried to readjust while still watching, and the dog bounded right back to the desk, snarling again. "Any hope if you're calling the dog off?" she asked, trying to keep her voice composed.
"Possibly, if you throw me the keys."
"And if I give you the keys, you won't kill me?"
"I already said I'd call the dog off. Don't get greedy."
"I think I'll just stay up here, then, until the gas knocks you all out. Daniel's probably got enough brain cells to spare."
"See, I think I'll be okay, because even though Einstein can't reach you, Daniel can. And if the gas hits you after he relieves you of those masks, well, the unconscious fall to the floor won't kill you, obviously, but it won't do you any favors."
"Why would I do that?" Daniel asked.
"What?"
Kevin demanded.
"She's on our side, Kev." "Whoa there! Are you insane? There are two very different sides here, kid. Your brother is on one, and the sadist who tortured you is on the other. Which side are you on?"
"The side of reason, I guess."
"Good,"
Kevin grunted. "That's not your side, Kev."
"What?"
"Calm down. Listen, let me broker a truce here.
I can't believe you aren't reaching up there to throttle her yourself."
"She was only doing what you would have done in her place. Be honest. If you knew some stranger was going to kill millions of people and you needed to find out how to stop him, what would you do?"
"Find another solution. Like I did." "Listen to me, Danny. You're out of your league here. I know people like her. They're sick. They get some twisted high off other people's pain. They're like venomous.